When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
When your first choice is a big old bus,
you turn around and boom, you end up with us.
Sloppy seconds.
Oh, Diva.
Our number is 213-536-9180. Our email is sloppysecondspod@gmail.com. I'm never going to get that right. And now on with the show. Are you ready for some sloppy seconds, you stupid little fucks, you nasty little fucks, you dirty little fucks, you stupid little bitches? Hi, I'm Big Dipper and that's Meatball. Welcome back to Sloppy Seconds with Big Dipper and Meatball. Did I freeze?
No. You're just seeing our, at the current moment, silent, our guest reacting to you giving that intro.
Was that too much?
No, it was great. Okay. I think you're great. I just wanted to quickly pretend like it's, because obviously we're recording this ahead of time, but let's pretend like it's the day after Thanksgiving.
And you didn't go home.
Did you? Right. And you stayed your ass put. Did you love the football, Meatball?
Sports, you know, I love a ball. I love men in tights. It's my favorite thing.
Did you eat too much food?
Of course. Now, I did have a delicious vegan meal.
Oh, stunning.
It was great. It was a stuffed tofu. Now, did
and then you,
you
went
kiss
out to
your
the
cousin
garage?
In the garage?
Me? No.
Did you kiss your cousin in the garage?
Did I tell you about that time me and that neighbor boy, we rubbed our dicks together in the garage? Did we ever talk about this?
No, we haven't talked about that.
Okay, maybe I'll talk about it later. Did you eat the vegan meal and then run outside and like shovel a bunch of chicken in your
Yeah, I had fried chicken, but I told him I was like, leave it in the bushes out front. And then I was like, I got to go out for a cigarette. Just down
Do
on the fried chicken.
Do you still smoke cigarettes?
No, but I would use it as an excuse to eat fried chicken.
I guess that makes sense. Real talk, it is, you know, a few days before. I think I'm going to make pigs in a blanket, but not the bullshit, like, freezer kind. I think I'm going to go get the full croissant pastry and put a whole ass hot dog in there and then put some of my homemade pickles and some relish and, like, pickled onions on it, and I'm going to make some weird pigs in a blanket moment.
I actually just like almost threw up thinking about all those things wrapped in a croissant.
Yes, man.
No, I can understand a sausage, like a good sausage and cheese wrapped up. But the minute you start adding pickles, isn't that adding like water? Isn't that going to make the bread
doughy
inside?
Well, no, it's how you serve it. You serve it with a little mustard, a little pickle on the side, like a cornichon. Why do you say that?
Cornichon.
We'll ask our guests. Let's come back. We'll
anyway,
be right
let's
back.
Go take a break. Buy a bed.
Okay, we are back. And we have a very special guest with us today, the winner of season 8 of RuPaul's Drag Race, the star of the HBO show, We're Here, and the suspiciously large woman, Bob the Drag Queen!
Ooh,
it's,
baby.
It's a cornichon.
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 Yeah, it's a little sweet pickle. Tiny little pickle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was really with you up until you started talking about adding pickles. I was with Meatball. It sounded great, and then once you started talking about pickles, it became white nonsense.
Wait. But haven't you ever had like a Chicago style hot dog? They put the whole pickle right on it.
Yes, but is a hot dog.
I'm gonna put a hot dog in a croissant.
What I like with the Chicago style hot dogs is when they have like all the vegetables, like the basically salsa on top of it, but not the pickle. Like I don't want the pickle. I want the tomatoes and the peppers and that stuff. And raw, by the way, not slimy grilled peppers. Like
raw dog.
Yeah.
You want that
crunch?
I don't want.
You had me up until pickles. If I come by, make some without pickles. You need to make options.
I'll make options.
And what are your opinions on pickles just in general?
Yeah, like, we're very pickle-pro podcast.
I love pickles. So I did this thing for a while back when I was in Berkeley where I would make a... You ever heard of a coolickle? Okay, see, I love pickles. A coolickle is when you take when you buy like a big jar, like a gallon jar of pickles, take out all the pickles and then you pour the pickle juice into a pitcher and you make Kool-Aid out of it. Put the pickles back in the jar and then pour the Kool-Aid back in. Come back in 2 weeks and you have Kool-Aid infused pickles.
Oh, okay.
Are they dill pickles? Or are they like the butter, the what are the sweet ones?
Well,
called?
they end up tasting some of them depending on what you have, they kind of can taste like a butter pickle, which is a sweet pickle. So they end up tasting a little bit sweet, like pink lemonade makes for a great one. Fruit punch makes for a great one. Cherry does not make for a great cool liquor. I've done a lot of experiments.
They cut Jasmine Masters short when they put her edit together. She actually said, no tea, no shade, no pink lemonade, pickles.
She would have won. No tea, no shade, no pink lemonade, pickles. But the thing is, like, they're also, they're, I mean, it's pretty great when you get like a spear. If you get a pickle, if you get the spears, they make pretty good cool pickles. And if you do a whole pickle, you're going to have to just wait longer. Now, if you get the slices of pickles, the ridge slices, they will obviously pick it up as well. But if you really want the full cool pickle experience, you have to wait a while and you have to get the entire pickle.
I don't think you know that we had a pickle making competition on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, we did.
We both lost. So I would like to maybe to each other. We were both just, they were both gross. It was just disgusting. But I think we should do a Kulikle challenge and then have Bob test them and then tell us what you think.
I would be into
that. Kulikles are where is at. I mean, but the thing about Kulikles is you're not starting with cucumbers. You're already starting with pickles.
Right. Which is better for us because the whole like labor intensive thing, I still have those two jars of those pickles that just taste like salt licks. They're in my fridge. I read somewhere online pickles. that I could rinse them off and then like rejar them and let them diffuse a little bit of the salt.
Well, I think where you went wrong with that is that you didn't use a recipe. You just
You didn't use a recipe? Are you one of those folks who just swears you who be measuring by hand, eyeballing shit?
I did measure. I made taco seasoning by my like just from stuff in my cupboard last night, and I didn't measure any of it. It was all right though. It was not.
You sound like a witch. Yeah. Oh, Alakazula, Mr. Kabula, 50 ew.
Wait, so listen, you just moved to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you going to stay here? What's your vibe?
I mean, so far I'm definitely staying. I'm looking for a home. We'll see if that even works out. I'm going to tell you right now, kids, like, if you're listening to this and you're young, do not ever let your credit get bad.
Oh, yeah.
There comes a point in your life where even if you have good income, bad credit can still fuck your shit up. So, like, I'm telling y'all right now, I'm telling you, take my word for this. Believe me when I tell you, make sure you maintain good credit as long as you can because it will come back to bite you in the end.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like you need to find, like, a gay landlord or realtor who knows you're good for it because they know you as an entertainer and be like, I don't care what the paper says. This person is running a small empire. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm just showing them that I have like these things coming up and these contracts and I'm basically, you know, it feels like good faith. And if I get it, I get it. And if not, I'll just wait until I can. Well, I mean, there are some queens out here who are literally buying houses in cash. I'm like, you better go off. I'm not going to lie. I'm not there. But I mean, good for those girls who are buying houses in cash. Go off.
It's crazy because I just moved. I'm in this new apartment and like, you know, having to tell the person like I'm a freelancer and I work a lot and I like I have enough income to afford this apartment. I had to show him so much. But because my credit is good, they were like, oh, okay. And it's totally what you're saying. Like, my parents scared me. I don't think I got my first credit card until I was 25. I got a credit card because I had to, there was something I was starting to buy plane tickets or whatever. And I was like, oh, I need a credit card to do this. I can't buy a plane ticket online with a debit card or something.
We have very similar circumstances. My mom told me for years that credit cards were very bad and that they would ruin your credit. She assured me, never get a credit card. So I never got one. I never applied for one. I am now 34. I got my first credit card at 34. And also not only that, but like I recently entered this thing where I had really, really bad credit, but it had been on my record for so long that it my all of my credit was wiped. So at the beginning of last year, I had no credit. Zero.
Oh
credit.
My God.
And is that nothing. From what is that from? Is it from if you didn't have a credit card, is it from student loans or it's from
But it was from a lot of stuff. I mean, I don't want to mean that's fine. It's okay.
You don't got to
actually bills. No, I don't mind saying because this is something that is a reality about growing up without a lot of money. When I was a kid in my household, my mom was trying to keep all the lights on. So if the lights went out, she would have to get them in one of her kids' names. And that is, it happens in a lot of Black families, a lot of poor families. And I had basically bills, outstanding bills in my name when I was a minor. But I also don't hold that against my mother because my mother was doing what she had to do to make sure that I could see with lights and have electricity and wash our clothes and, you know, take showers and have all that stuff. So that was one. And then I had student loans that racked up against me. So in Georgia, I had something called, not just Georgia, but we had something called Pell Grant, which is if you're poor, you go to college for free. Or they'll it's not free. Someone's paying for it. They pay for you to go to your college.
Yeah, like a state university, right?
Yeah, but I did not, but it doesn't cover summer courses. So I tried to take some summer classes, and then I failed the summer classes because it was like, these were like the first online classes. This is like when online classes were first a thing. And they were like, oh yeah, you need it. You can't come to the school every day and use these computers. You have to do this from home. And I was like, I don't even have internet at home because this is the early, this is 2004, and I don't have internet in my home. Like, not everyone has internet.
That's so nuts. So
it was a pretty wild time. So I didn't pay off those student loans until I think maybe, 10 years later. And when you don't pay off student loans, they report you every 30 days. So I was getting reported every 30 days for almost 10 years.
Well, when I moved into this place, I found out that my old roommate from like 4 years ago didn't pay any of the bills. I had moved out and left the bills in my name, and he didn't pay for like 3 months of bills. And I didn't know that until I was like, why is my credit bad? And I went back and looked, and it was like $63 that I owed 4 years ago.
And they got you for that.
And they got me, gal. I had to like figure out how to pay the debt collector. And then they were like, oh yeah, it's spiked up to like $400 because you haven't paid. I was like, what is happening to me? Anyway, enough right, about our money problems. Let's start talking about you doing drag, mama. What made you want to start doing drag?
I started doing drag back when my credit went bad. No, I'm kidding. I just keep leveraging
my credit. You're like, the thing about credit cards.
I started doing drag because I watched RuPaul's Drag Race. I watched Drag Race and I thought to myself, that looks fun. And I bet I could do that. I saw BB win and I said, I could do that.
You said, well, how many times did you audition for the show before you got on?
Four. I auditioned four times. And there seems to be a point of pride for girls who auditioned once and got on, which I'm like, go off. But I'm also like, but I competed once and won. So.
They're like, I auditioned once, I got on a season, and then they kept bringing me back for All Stars. They keep teasing me along with the World of Wonder show. I've never won any prize money. You're like, okay.
But I'm also like, the thing about, I had to learn this when I was working in children's theater, and we would cast kids in shows. Like, if you don't make it on Drag Race, it's really not about you as, it says nothing about your value as a drag queen. And a lot of drag queens cannot see that. They really think, if I don't make it on Drag Race, I will never be a successful queen. And I'm like, bitch, being on Drag Race does not ensure that you will be a successful queen.
And, well, yes, there are plenty of examples of that. But you probably also know this. I feel like Alaska and Willem have talked about this a little bit, but that, like, Coco got the call to be on season four, but then they rescinded it after Alyssa said no. So then they got Coco on season five because Alyssa was coming. So it's like they knew they wanted the two of them to have their drag queen drama on the show. And so,
yeah,
you know, like it's not necessarily about you and your worth. It's how do you fit into a cast of 14 exactly. And how do you make a good TV show?
And I don't think that it's shady. I personally don't think it's shady for Drag Race to do that. You have to do a competition. But first and foremost, you have to make a show that people want to watch. That is first and foremost. Like, that is incredibly important. You have to have a show with a good cast And obviously they're doing something right. I mean, they've won, and I verified this, and I don't know if Willem will concede.
Oh, because we talked about the Emmys, right?
Drag Race has won more Emmys than any reality competition ever.
Right.
I cannot believe Monet believed Willem so quickly. That really grinded my gears.
I loved your response. You're like, you just believe her because she's in a blonde wig.
Yeah,
there's a white woman in a blonde wig. Well, no, it's really, I mean, I think that's really interesting because I also think of the Drag Race world. You also mentioned on that, we're continuing to reference the sibling rivalry Race Chaser crossover episode that happened, but you also mentioned that the subreddit for Drag Race is sort of the biggest one for
for television show. In any TV-based subreddit, it recently outgrew Game of Thrones.
Which is incredible, and there's something in that culture of critiquing the show as a fan. Obviously, there's a lot of toxicity towards the queens, but everyone goes like, oh, the producers did this and blame production. Blame production for making a show that you've watched for over a decade with spinoff after spinoff and a war. Like, they're messy for a reason because they're good at producing a reality TV show.
Well, it's easier to hate a mystery person in the closet, like who's in a closet, like editing sneaky little things, than it is to acknowledge that a queen went on TV and said really mean things and then they aired it.
Right.
It's kind of like when I look back at Max Milanovi getting eliminated from Drag Race.
Oh, so yeah,
and she had like that little moment where she was like on the stairs and like she was like singing, and it was. And I'm sure when they were doing it, the producers were like, "This looks insane." And she probably thought to herself, "Well, they won't use this. They wouldn't make me look bad." And it's like, girl, they will. Anything you do in front of when you show up, you're agreeing to let them air anything you do in front of the cameras. If you say it in the corner, if you whisper it and you're wearing a mic, if you do something in front of a camera and it does not make you look good, I don't know why. What makes you think they're casting a show where everyone's the good guy and where everyone comes out smelling like roses?
Did you ever think you wouldn't be the good guy?
No, I never, because I don't think that I, there was a moment where we were all at Roscoe's in Chicago, and we had just left the, it was during the promo tour, and we had just left the venue, and it was me, Acid Betty, Derek Barry, and like, I think Robbie Turner. In a car.
So you and the pack of the good guys?
Yeah. All the babes.
And then Derek Barry said, someone like Derek Barry just, because Derek Barry had no clue that she wouldn't be a good guy. She genuinely thought that I was going to be the bad guy.
What?
And she said, well, you're going to be a bad guy. And then I said, I don't think that that's the case. And then Acid Betty looked at her and she said, girl, you're the heel. You're the bad guy. You are the bad guy of the season. And then she was like, wait, what? And then she said to Derek, she goes, and then Derek goes, maybe we'll all be the bad guy. And then I said, Betty, and then I looked at Derek Barron. I said, no, she said, maybe we'll both be the bad guy, me and her. And I said, baby, that's not how TV works.
No, baby. Poor Derek.
Aww. Wait, Meatball, what was your... Can you give us the bullet points of your relationship with Derek Barry? Didn't you harass her online?
The boulet points?
Wow.
Don't say that. Now, I think it was because she... When they said that she needed to draw her eyebrows on, I became obsessed with that one image of her eyebrows. And it looked really bad. And then
you
remember,
love to replay... You love to, like, post and repost and...
What do you mean?
Like the video of that girl falling. That video of that girl falling, you kept just playing different songs over that one girl falling over and over again.
I was giving her options. Like, if it was going to happen again, maybe try these songs. Now, I remember I left my sugar pill taco in LA and I was heading to San Francisco and I just needed it. And so I just kept posting pictures of her saying, like, I'm going to look like this if I don't get the right makeup. And it was just a bunch of pictures of Derek with her eyebrows covered. And then she got really offended by it. And then we talked. I don't know. Well, I think we're friends now. I'd say we're friends. Would you say that you're friends with her, Bob?
Yeah, I like Derek. Me and Derek are friends. Derek is what makes Derek interesting is that she's not super self-aware. So that makes her great television. But then once you talk to her for a while, she'll be like, oh, okay. All right. I see what you mean.
What I loved on the Vegas show is that like weird, dumb Easter egg of like her wearing the same polo at the party, the same gray polo with the huge logo on it at the party when she's like stirring shit with Naomi, as she was in the workroom when she was stirring shit with Naomi. Did you see this? It's a side-by-side image of Derek in the same gray polo with some design on it.
How many years apart is
from
that?
Drag Race to a party at her house, both times being like, well, Naomi.
Well, this is my shit talking polo. This is my
right. But that's the kind of magic that I think Derek has, because it's like there's no
grab
way.
Grab me the shit talking polo. I'm gonna talk shit. Because
there's no way she knew. Like it just like that. That's like a beautiful moment. You know what I mean?
I mean, imagine her mind being that remarkable.
Now I want to ask you about We're Here, because I absolutely love it. It's so good. I'm so glad that it was nominated for an Emmy. What was it like being nominated for an Emmy, honey, Miss Ma'am?
Okay, I would like to be clear the air. I was not nominated for an Emmy. I am the host of a show that is nominated for an Emmy.
But I feel like you are one of, like, you guys are the show. You, Shangela, and
no,
Eureka
I agree.
Show,
Misha and Eureka so are definitely the show, but we didn't win. We lost to Cheer. But if it would have won, we would
because y'all didn't
won.
Have a drug battle on your show.
There was also, wasn't there like a...
Yeah. Oh, wait, Eureka was there every time one.
There was
no, there was a whole other scandal about
Cheer. Oh, you didn't hear about the wasn't it like a pedophilia scandal
on Jerry?
You didn't hear about
this? Right. I did.
No, but Bob, you all negotiated well in your contracts because you are also listed as producers on that show.
Yeah.
So had you won an Emmy, you would have got an Emmy.
No. So it's different. So not all the producers get nominated.
Just the executive.
Because there are different producers in different things. But we are producers on the show because when I first sat down with them, I was like, guys, we like need to be listed
involved
as producers because we need to listen to producers. Me, Shangela, and Eureka, we those numbers we do, we come up with them. There's no secret team coming in giving us a number. We come up with those numbers ourselves. We hired our entire creative team. So each one of us has a team. Shangela has a team. I have a team and Eureka has a team. And we also hired our entire creative teams as well. So all the outfits, we hired the costume designers. We hired the hair people. We did all of it.
We had Layla on and she was kind of describing what it's like for doing a 1 week shoot in each one of these cities. But what exactly is the schedule? So you get there and you meet your person. And then how long do you have before the show?
We have 9 days to do the show.
Okay.
So we're doing all this in about actually 8 days. Because the first day we get there isn't the first day we shoot. Usually we shoot the second day. So we're actually doing all of it about 7 to 8 days. We do every single thing. And the 9th day we leave.
Wow. Wait, so speaking of the shows, well, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long.
When my fridge is stocked with Factor meals, I'm like, oh baby, I don't have to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is so nice. The combinations are so good. I am a meat eater, but the vegetable options, there are so many. Like, I remember I had it was a mushroom with pasta and like a cauliflower rice. And I was like, the mushroom is filling. Like, there's plenty of portion, there's plenty of vegetable, and there's plenty of flavor. And I am usually sort of not a microwave person.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool that this quality of food can just be heated up in the microwave.
And so fast. I also love it because I am a very much into ordering delivery.
I know.
Now having all the food there, I can kind of pick what I want and it's ready in 2 minutes. And I don't have to wait an hour for stuff to get delivered. And these are way healthier options than ordering delivery.
Completely. And when they have multiple things in them, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, if I cook for myself, all I'm going to eat is the biggest bowl of pasta you've ever seen in your life. But this is like, you get a little pasta and the chicken and a vegetable all in one dish.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
And Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you gotta do is heat up and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause to reschedule deliveries that suit your lifestyle.
And we're celebrating Earth Day all month long with Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu items for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/sloppyseconds50 and use code sloppyseconds50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box.
That's code SLOPPYSECONDS50 at factormeals.com/SLOPPYSECONDS50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
That's a slay, baby.
Do you love anime, gaming, movies, and discovering how your favorite pop culture affects everything you do? Then join us on Crunchyroll Presents The Anime Effect. I'm Nick Friedman.
I'm Lee Alec Murray.
And I'm Leah President. Every week you can listen in while we break down the latest pop culture news and dish on what new releases we can't get enough of.
Whether you love movies, I'm going to tell you all about the hopeful 4K re-release of Tron Legacy that happens.
I'm right there with you. Or music. The music in this show is absolutely incredible.
Or anime. Yeah. And under this mask is another mask.
You can discover your new favorites right here on The Anime Effect.
Listen every Friday wherever you get your podcasts and watch full video episodes on Crunchyroll or on the Crunchyroll YouTube channel.
Okay, so when you get to the cities, when we started this phone call, you mentioned you had just received a little message on Grindr.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
What's it like when you get to a city for We're Here and there's maybe like one person on Grindr 100 miles away, or it's just all your production? It's just all your production team on Grindr?
Yeah, it's the entire production crew. I mean, we block. I block friends on Grindr, not because I don't want to see you on Grindr, but you're taking up valuable real estate on the grid. And if we're traveling together, I don't need the first 8 people. Like, when we do the Work the World tour, and there's fucking, like, 15 queers all traveling the world together, I don't need all of y'all taking up my entire grid. And the next person is 2 swipes down. No, Mary. But there is no, in my experience, I can't speak for everyone, but there is no sexy time on these trips, because there's not a whole lot of queer people in these towns. And the closest person on your grid will be maybe 6 miles away, and then the next person is like 15, 20. And they never have profile pictures. I'm also thinking about getting off Grindr anyway, because I've had too many.
Well, you already have 2 partners.
Yeah, you got a lot. So you got how like many hands out you got? There.
But I'm not done. I say this being as humble and realistic as possible. Whatever the level of being too famous for Grindr is, I think I've just crossed the threshold. Like, it's here, and I am like right there.
So, what percentage of your
people? Yeah. Do you ever get people that pretend like they don't know who you are, and then once you're with them?
Yes, which is really. So this guy that I was writing the other day, he was like, "Hey, this, all that," and then he was like, "My name's so and so," and I said, "Well, my name's Caldwell," and I said, "To be honest, I thought you would have known that." And he goes, "Why?" And I said, "Well, you follow me on Instagram. Like when you click someone's Instagram, if it says follow back, I'm like, well, you follow me on Instagram." And he was like, "Oh, I didn't recognize you." And I was like, "Bitch, I don't. I'm not pulling Crystal Method looks."
Like you said, like, it's like this, me, but a lash and a wig.
Yeah, like people like me and Willem. It's like, this is how I look, and then like with makeup on. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm not doing like crazy Trixie Mattel, Crystal Method, Peppermint in that Club Kid challenge look. Like, and plus, not only that, but like on Drag Race, we're out of drag for like 75% of the show. We're only in drag for like the last 5-10 minutes. So like, don't act like you didn't know who I was. But anyway, and then I found out that he was also simultaneously chatting with my boyfriend on Grindr, who he also followed on Grindr as well. And then he was also chatting with my roommate the week before. And I was like, who he also followed? I was like, girl, like, just say I knew who you was. And if you find me attractive, then just let's leave from there. But don't act. Don't, you know, Meryl Streep. I didn't believe it.
How do all the apps work on your Android phone?
Yeah, what's that like? Oh my
God, how dare you? They work perfectly fine. And I will say, justice for Galaxy Samsung Note 20 X Plus.
The exploding phone from the airplane?
From the airport?
That was literally 5 years ago. That was literally 5 years ago.
Well, explain why it's still a warning on all the flights.
Galaxies are great, great phones. And I think that the iPhone has proven itself over time to be a very shady phone.
Shady phone, not a throwback to Peppermint.
You got that shady phone.
Oh, speaking of Peppermint, well, before Peppermint, I want to ask about your YouTube channel, specifically the video that you did with Christian Walker, because that was absolutely insane. How did you keep your cool?
I mean, I do sibling rivalry, so I'm used to talking to annoying people. No, I'm kidding. I think that when I talking to Christian Walker was just really interesting because he was, I didn't even realize until afterwards that his father is Herschel Walker. I don't know if you know this, but Herschel Walker is a famous football player. So Christian living in Beverly Hills and driving a Mercedes or Jaguar, whatever he drives,
in all a these certain tax is because, bracket.
It's because he is a child of an extremely wealthy person. So his black experience is atypical. It is not typical. It is atypical. It is different. It's not invalid. It is not invalid. But it's certainly not the status quo. And when most black people are addressing grievances, they're not talking about whatever Christian Walker is experiencing in his life. So I kept trying to think for myself. I always remember myself. If I had all of someone else's experiences, I would be just like them. I always think that whenever I think someone's irrational or crazy or whatever, I always think if I looked like you, was raised where you were raised, and had all the experiences you've had, I would be just like you. So it makes perfect sense that you are the way you are. I'm trying to figure out what experiences can we introduce to your life that will help you realize that what you're like. Christian Walker is one of those folks who, if he was an advocate on the right side, let's not say what's right and wrong, on the liberal side,
let's say what's right and wrong,
he'd be an icon. It's kind of, I said about Shirley Phelps all the time. Shirley Phelps is the head of the Westboro Baptist Church now that Fred Phelps is dead. She's so smart and so tenacious and such a hard worker. I always say if she was on the liberal side, she'd be a fucking queer icon.
She, with all those parodies, I mean, she's a genius.
Girl.
Oh, well, the parodies. Well, because she would also be fighting for the lives of queer people, so people would be celebrating her, of course. Yeah, I think that's interesting. Like, you know, I totally love that perspective of thinking about all the experiences of someone else's life. The thing that always gets me is, like, less about the experiences and more about, I don't know what it's like to be persecuted in my home country and risk everything to try to cross the border for a better life. I don't know what it's like to be on the receiving end of a system of racism that's set up against me. But I have the ability to tap into a small percentage of empathy and understanding that gives me a window into that world. So that's what I just never understand. Like, I don't think, I mean, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think a lot of, like, right-wing conservatives sit around and go, I want to understand why liberals think the way they think.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to understand, like, someone.
And I feel like liberals do that all the time.
Yeah. Well, someone fleeing their country and being like, if I get deported, I'll be killed. I want to be clear on that. If I go back to the country that I was born in or that I just came from, I will be killed. Period, point blank, done. All I'm asking is asylum so that I can live. I'm not trying to take jobs. I'm not trying to jihad America. I'm not trying to make people Muslims. I'm not trying to bring cocaine from Mexico. I'm just trying to not die. And some people are like, just do it legally. And I'm like, do you understand how, first of all, coming here and then going to the immigration officers and seeking asylum is the legal way. That is a legal process. But I have a hard time understanding how people can't think to themselves, wow, this person just wants to live. Like, imagine living in a country. I can't even fathom feeling that unsafe in the country. That means there's nowhere in the entire country you can go where you won't feel unsafe. That I can't fathom. I can tap into the empathy, but I can't imagine that, you know?
It's so wild. So let's talk about lip syncing, because you are, yeah, just a harsh right turn into a new topic. You are a really fantastic lip syncer, and I want to trigger warning. We're going to talk about lip sync suicide, which is something, or what did you call it when you did it?
Well, that's what we used to call it. We used to call it lip sync suicide, which probably is not the proper term these days. I mean, in New York City, we were just calling it lip sync. We called it drag suicide.
Drag suicide. Because the first time I ever saw you, I think the first time I ever saw you perform was with Thorgy. You did a duet at Westgay.
Oh my God.
To some song that was like, I could be a freak. Was it that song? Maybe
I could.
Yeah.
I could be a freak. And we did the whole I could be a freak.
So, and
the
then
first
I was,
time I ever saw you perform, your name was Kitten with a Whip, and we were at Excess.
Slave name. And you were
lip syncing. I forget what happened. I think I can't remember if it was you or Peppermint. Someone pulled me out of a bathroom and was like, "It's your turn to sing," and just dragged me onto the stage to sing.
Excess?
Yeah.
Excess Lounge in Chelsea?
Yeah.
You used to live in New York City?
Yeah, I used to live in the East Village. I also before Drag Race ran into you at an airport and like came over and said hi, and then you got up and walked away from me.
Whoop.
You're not telling the whole
story. I walked
over
and I said, "Are you Bob the Drag Queen?" And you said yes. And I was like, "I'm a huge fan of your work." And you went, "Thanks." And then got up and walked away.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. I said thank you.
Go on.
No, I don't think it was
wrong
either.
Because the story
you just told was, I saw you at the airport and you walked away. You didn't say I said yes, and then I said thank you, and then I walked away.
I didn't lie. I maybe omitted some facts, but I did not lie.
Which paints the idea that because the way you told the story makes it sound like you walked over and I just looked you from the top of your head to the toes, to the nape of your head, did a neck roll, and then walked in the opposite direction. When was it?
It was literally like maybe 2 months before Drag Race aired.
Interesting. Well, there was
there's also a really big time
during before Drag Race film where people would be like, "Are you Bob the Drag Queen?" I'm like, "Yeah," and they'd be like, "I love you." I go, "Thank you." And they'd be like, "How'd you do on the show? Just tell me." But the show hadn't even been like announced yet, so people be like, "I know you're on the show. I know you're on it. So just tell us what happened." And I'd be like, "Oh my God, I have to get the fuck out of here. This is like." Such
oh,
a
so maybe
contract.
You spooked him, Meatball. Maybe you spooked her.
Every Drag Race girl knows there's a period of time between there's two weird times. There's one was between you filmed and between the announcement of you being in the cast, where everyone just expects you to just tell them about being on Drag Race. And I'm like, I cannot do that. And I respect the process, so I wouldn't do that. And then there's another period of time between when they announce it and when it airs, where folks are like, "Tell me how'd you do?" And I'm like, I can't. So there was a big part of time where I would be like, "Oh my God, thank you so much." And then I would just like go about my business.
What did you
but about did you, that? Is it true that the girls' managers will tell clubs where they place just to make sure that they get higher bookings? Like
my
when
manager
the show is
didn't
over?
Do that. I mean, my manager didn't do that. I also let me tell you right now, I don't fuck around. When it comes to contracts and also respecting the process of making a great show, I didn't even tell my managers how I did. They asked me and I was like, "I'm not telling you. Like, you have to just wait and see. Which, by the way, is probably not smart. Let me just say that out loud right now. But I was like, I respect the process of TV way too much to go around, because I want it to be a good show and I didn't want it to be spoiled or ruined or someone be like, I heard this, that, and this, that. Because you tell your manager that, and they'll go around telling everyone what you're running to the top three, and then everyone's telling everyone, then now there's no surprise that you made it. I also was in a very lucky position for whatever reason. From the Meet the Queens, I was one of the favorites. Like, from the time they announced the cast, people just decided that they liked me. So I didn't have to, like, sell myself.
Right. Where did you tell people you were when you were filming? Because a lot of people go, like, oh, I'm doing some theater project. Like, Shea Coulee told us that she was doing a costume design at a theater project up in the woods in, like,
so she didn't have internet or
Pacific Northwest. Yeah, like, she was summer, like,
I'm
stock
in the woods, baby.
That's what she told all of her friends.
I was doing a cruise. I was on a cruise.
See, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Okay, but back to what we were talking about, the drag queen or drag suicide, because I saw you would have a, it was a Monday night show at Barracuda?
Monday nights at Barracuda, yep.
And you would do 90 minutes by yourself, if not long. You would just get up there and be like, okay, now it's the Bob show. Slap your sign on the back wall and hit it.
That big sign.
You would do, like, I mean, how many songs would you lip sync?
So what would happen was, the structure of Monday nights was, I would come out and I would do a number, like a number or a mix or a straight up number, and then I would do two of those, and then I would do Drag Suicide, which would usually last about 30 minutes. It'd be about 30 minutes of, it was literally, you go around and you say, everyone give me a song, give me an artist, give me a song, give me a genre. Believe by Cher, Fuck the Police by N.W.A., Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus, and you would take all of them. The DJ Natsu at the time, would take them all down, write them down in real time. He would make a massive 30-minute mega mix of all these numbers, and then I would just do the entire thing, a little snippets of each one, do the entire thing. I would be so exhausted, be sweating, and then when it was all done, I would do current events, and then I would do two more numbers. And then
current
sometimes
events.
An encore.
Current events. You know, a little vamping.
Little vamping.
Well, that was me, like, catching my breath after doing Drag Suicide. And it was about a 90-minute show every Monday.
Woo. When that's I saw incredible. You do it, someone suggested Defying Gravity, and you got up on a stool. You actually, what you did, Meatball, is Miss Bob went behind the curtain on a ladder and closed the curtains behind, and then, like, inched her way up the ladder with her head sticking out of the curtain. And I think you grabbed a mop. I think there was a mop back there that you grabbed.
Really, what happened is I would close the curtain. I would close the curtain over my head, and then my head would be at the level where it is, and then you wouldn't see the ladder, but all you would see is my head going all the way to the very top of the ceiling, and then usually the bar back would run and hand me a broom, and then I would grab the broom, and it was, I mean, it used to really bring the house down. Like, people used to go crazy.
Well, because it feels very, like, of the moment, just like, oh, I'm gonna grab these items. So I love that.
And it's one of the things where the very first time I did it, it was like, someone just like asked me if I would do it, and then I was like, yeah, and then I did it, and then I came up with that idea on the spot, and then it just became like, people are like, you have to see when Bob does Defying Gravity. Is so crazy. So they would always,
can you
be
give
like
us a really,
you gotta
quick
do Defying
There it is. That's it. Okay.
We'll what do you call your vocal bite quality? What do you call that tone?
It is my voice is wrecked. You know what actually wrecked my voice? It's from years of lip syncing, but I would sing the song while I was lip syncing. And I would do it in this, like, kind of like falsetto style voice. So whenever I'm lip syncing, I'm actually singing the song, but in, like, falsetto. So, like, if I was doing Mariah Carey's Emotions, which I did all the time, if you turn the music off and got a mic feed, it'd be me going, I've been looking into my eyes, it makes me feel so. That is what I'm actually doing. It's really bad for your voice. And I did that I still do. If I lip sync a gig, I'm still doing that. I'm out there doing, I kissed a girl and I liked it. it, but you should not do that to your voice for hours.
You should release a whole album like that. Just that singing covers. Vocal fry. Just covers up in that.
Well, bit. I did. I think probably the most famous one would be me doing my Celine Dion, All Coming Back to Me Now. But of course, you would have to hear my horrible voice actually singing the song.
Oh, I love the classic.
The Crazy.
Crazy is good.
Taken. Now, how do you feel about that just being like snatched and stolen by everybody?
Well, it's interesting. I have a few numbers that have kind of just entered the drag lexicon.
Yeah.
Kind of like how, like Detox's purse move. Mm-hmm.
Mannequin. Mm-hmm.
Like people just do it now. People just do it. Like everyone's just like, oh, good idea.
But and that's years stealing.
Ago, it is stealing. I agree. Years ago, this queen came, like, wrote me on Facebook. Was like, oh my God, I love your Vogue number. Can you send it to me? I want to do it. And I was like, but I came up with that. Like, I made that mix in GarageBand. That's mine. And they said, okay, it's fine. Just send me all the clips and I'll make it myself. And what? I said, no, but okay. What you're not saying is like, it's my idea. I took Vogue and then I made a really interesting interpretation of it. And it's my thing. And they were just like, oh, and then I looked up and they had found all the clips and did it themselves. And people do take my clips and perform them. And it is a little bit annoying, but it's also one of those, it is what it is. I mean, to be fair, in that clip, I have appropriated, you know, Sissy Spacek's voice and CeeLo Green's voice and Uzo Aduba's voice. I did rearrange them in a way that I think is very clever and nuanced and funny.
Right.
But it's also one of those things where, like, it's just part of the world now. And some people know where it came from. Some people know that it was me. And some people are just like, oh, that's just that popular drag number that everyone does.
I love Burning Up. It's too damn hot.
It is 81,000 damn degrees. I am sitting right next to my air conditioner. Right next to it, okay? It is on the lowest temperature on the highest
on
damn
the
setting.
Highest set.
What the fuck do I need to put this bitch on? Turbo? This is fucking
I love when she says damn in those different spots. It's so funny. Yeah. So we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, I have a big question I'm going to ask you. But we are also going to do our favorite segment, which is called Fuck Talk.
That's from Wicked.
We'll be right back.
Fuck Talk.
Okay, we are back.
We are back again.
Now, Meatball, you may roll your eyes, and I'm gonna let you finish, but let me just ask this one question because I think this is important. Bob, you said some very nice things about me on your podcast about, like,
delete it.
Moving and shaking and getting things
Leave
done.
Leave meeting.
And I appreciate that. But I wanted to ask you, so, like, you've produced your own comedy special. You were in the independent film. Two of them. And they're distributed. It's not like go to bobthedragqueen.com and download the zip folder. It's like you can watch them on legit ass streaming platforms. You've been in independent films. You produce your own podcast with Monet. You have your YouTube channel. I mean, you're running your own entertainment business with editors and producers and assistants and all these people. And then all of that independent stuff, you have also worked on HBO shows, starring in one, Emmy nominated. You did like legit theater. Was Angels in America at Berkeley Rep?
If it's Tony Award winning Berkeley Repertory Theater.
Okay, there you go. So I'm curious about the difference between walking on set at your HBO show or someone where there's like a union stage manager and that sort of thing versus all of the independent production the drag queens do. We talk about this all the time, but the sort of level of prestige when there's like a network behind it, but independently, you have what, 1.8 million Instagram followers or something? And a huge, you know, it's like you're a force to be reckoned with as an individual. But what's the difference between sort of doing things independently or doing things on that large scale?
Well, I realized that, like, when you go to something like the Berkeley Repertory Theater or go to an HBO show or or even do a guest spot on like one of the shows I've done a guest spot on. It's so interesting because sometimes they'll either treat you like, it depends on who it is and if gays work there, quite frankly, they'll treat you like a random, like a celebrity guest on the show, or sometimes they'll just treat you like that person, like, oh, you're an influencer. And I'm like, I mean, I'm not an influencer, but I don't like the idea of someone being like, my whole thing is just taking pictures on Instagram, and then I lucked out and I got this gig in High Maintenance, or this gig in Playing House, or this gig in, you know, I can't remember that, the Kate McKinnon movie that I did. What was it called? Rough Night. I got this through acting. Like, I auditioned and I got these roles because I auditioned for the roles. That's how I got the roles. Each one of them, actually. It does, in my opinion, sometimes you have a pretty far reach when you do something like HBO, when you do something like Berkeley Rep. It just, everyone just kind of thinks it's, and it is, it does have a prestige to it. But I think that's where we're forgetting the fact that we, like in the queer community, we have the opportunity to truly pick our own celebrities. We pick our own people who are doing amazing things. Which is starting to happen. It's starting to happen more and more and more. Like, look at what Trixie has been able to accomplish in her career. She's not in any movies. Bianca's not in any. I mean, she's in two movies, Hurricane Bianca. And if you watch those, you can get through anything. but despite not being having in anything of any remark, I mean, although Bianca was in the West End twice, actually. It should not discredit the amazing things that we've accomplished on our own outside of these networks.
Because I think about that all the time. Like sometimes when, like, for instance, like when we did the crossover thing, it's like you, Monet, Willem, and Alaska are four of the most famous drag queens in the world. And we're just like sitting on a Zoom call being like, is the audio working? Like, let's blah, blah, blah. And then I think to myself, I'm like, is this what it's like? I mean, obviously right now everyone is sort of doing things remotely, but even if we were to do that in person, it would have been like me plugging in microphones. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then I'm like, is it just like that on these big time things, but there's just like more I don't know.
It's like, way more complicated. Like when you go to like, first of all, I've learned this. When you do theater, like theater people are, no one is more efficient. No one is better at communicating. No one is better at showing up on time. No one is better at holding your nose to the grindstone like theater people. It is just the most well-oiled machine I've ever been a part of. Doing a show at Berkeley Rep, I was like so intimidated by the Tony Award-winning actors around me and the amazing set and like the huge theater. And we were performing with no microphones. And you've heard my voice. I lose my voice all the time. And I was like,
"Well, wait, didn't you have to use a microphone one night because you had like shot your voice completely?"
Yeah, one night I had to use a microphone, and one night they had to. So one night I couldn't go on because my voice was shot, and they sent on my understudy. He had never gone on before. And just to be clear, it is a 7-hour play. So you really gotta, I would never want to be an understudy for the show. He was not ready. He did not know his lines, and then they had to cancel the next show. And there was the one understudy, like the one of the characters, the understudy would come to the show like 3 times a week. He would watch the show, and whenever his character would speak, he would hold up his program and speak the lines in tandem with him.
That's how you understudy.
That's smart. Yeah.
So one time, if you look at, he'd be in the audience with his program in front of his face, and then one time he had to go on, and bitch, he rocked my world. Like, I remember being on stage with him, and sometimes you go through the motions. We did the show 8 times a week. I was crying, and I mean, I cry. I would end up getting to the point where crying, but this was like new crying because it was like a new actor giving me new stuff. And I remember being like, "Bitch, you made me fucking cry." Like, I was like, it was so easy to act with you, because it was new and I didn't have to go through the motions of what me and Randy Harrison had gone through each time. The first time Randy did it, I cried too. But being with this new guy, I was like, girl, this just, you fucked me all the way up. Like, it was so good. I was like, bitch, that's how you motherfucking, it's like RuPaul, that's how you motherfucking understudy.
We get to choose our understudies.
In the theater at Berkeley Rep, we get to choose our understudies.
All right, Meatball, why don't you get freaky deaky with us?
All right.
Oh, I didn't tell you this. Sorry. I didn't tell you this.
Now, you said the whole world.
Sorry. Film world people are so weird at communicating. There'll be a moment where you're on set and everyone's just waiting, but everyone thinks they're waiting on someone else.
Yes.
And then I'll be like, what are we waiting on? And then Sal was like, I'm ready. And then Vito was like, I'm ready. And then Herman was like, I'm ready. I'm like, oh, so we're all ready, but no one said anything. Or like, I'll look up and I'll be like, hey, I really need a bottle of water. And then everyone just looks at me. And then they all look at each other. And then they all look back at me. So I've learned in the film world, you have to be like, Big Dipper, I need a glass. You have to like look at someone, say their name. Whereas in the theater world, if you say, oh my God, I think I need a glass of water, 5 bottles of water will show up.
Well, I also remember.
People in the theater world work on like a faster time schedule. Like I've done theater and I just had like a film crew in my house the other day and I was just like, why does it take so long to set this stuff up? Like
I've been
literally sitting here for 30 minutes and I was like, and you're moving a light back and forth on me. Like what are we doing?
And when you're in drag, I'm like, bitch, let me try it now. So when I did Tales of the City, what I realized was one of the guys was in Tales of the City, had worked on The Tick. And they have a rule. When you are doing a superhero movie, the superhero can only be in their suit for 4 hours. After that, you have to let them out of the suit. I looked at him and I said, I'm a fucking superhero.
Right.
You need to know that the way you treat superheroes is how you need to treat drag queens. Like I'd be like, I gotta go to the bathroom. And they would genuinely expect me to be back in 5 minutes. And I'm like, bitch, I will see you tomorrow. I have to take off all of my clothes, and then I have to take off my corset, and then I have to take off my thumbnails so that I can get through the tights and grab my junk. And then pee. And then you ever try to pee with your tights? You kind of just roll them so your hip pads don't fall out.
Yes.
And then you pop in the pee. It's just
and it just shoots out. Why is there more? Your body says, I'm done. And then you just got a wet spot on your tights for the rest of the night.
And it's different than, it's like different. The tights are holding in this extra little bit. It's so weird. So then I have to put that back on, then get fully redressed, put my corset back on, and then glue my last thumbnail. Then at the end of the day, you've glued your nails on so many times that it feels like you're gluing them on with water. The nails won't stick. You're like, and I'm like, I'm not going to be back in 5 minutes. I'm just not. Yes. I will see y'all at Christmas.
I will say, these people just tried to get me to do my drag makeup in 45 minutes. And I kept on being like, oh yeah, just give me 20 minutes. And then 20 minutes goes by and they're like, all right, are you done? And I was like still fucking around with my eyes. And I was like, do I look done? Like, we're just going
to
wait for
you. You have to pull a Valentina. You know what Valentina said? Someone said something like, oh my God, we're running late. And then Valentina just said, what are they going to do? Start without me.
Oh! And that's the thing. Now, wait, I do want to hear one story because I've heard it from Kimchi, but I would love to hear your version of events of when Valentina got Rent and decided to pack up her suitcase.
Oh, this is the best. This
and
is
leave.
The best. Let me just start by saying, I love Valentina. Like touring with Valentina is so much fun. When you tour with her, you also become part of the fantasy. Like, it feels so good to get swept up in the Valentina-ness. It's like being around Bibi Zaharbonet. Like, Bibi Zaharbonet was the first Valentina. Like, she really is an African queen, and you can't say anything different. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we're like we're working in I can't remember what city we were in, some city in America. And then Valentina steps out of the room and she like starts like screaming. We're like, oh my God, what happened to Valentina? And then she comes back and she goes, mi amor, which she really says, mi amor, I've been cast in Rent. And then she goes, grabs some earrings and then she gave them to Kim. And she goes, I want you to have these. And then Kim goes, I don't really like them. And she goes, no, please keep these. And then she looked at me and she goes, Bob, I never told you how beautiful you are. And I want you to know that. And then she told Brandon, she was like, I have to leave the cast. And I have to leave the show we're doing. And he was like, oh, are you guys starting filming like pretty soon? And she was like, no, in like 6 months. And he was like, oh, so you're starting the filming. Like, and she goes, no, it's like one day. Like, it's a lot. And he was like, why do you need to leave the show? why do you need to leave the show? She goes, I have to get ready. So it was like she was like ascending. She's like, it was honestly.
Did
it was
she really leave?
It was really. She left. I think she did one more show.
She was like, I gotta go get my voice lessons.
I gotta go.
Wow.
But also, goals is like work.
Also, was she dying? I want you to have these. I never told you you were beautiful.
I mean, like, it was like she was saying her final goodbyes. She was like, when she gave Kim the earrings, that was the wildest. Did Kim take the earrings?
She gave Kim earrings, and Kim apparently was like, I don't want these. And she's like, but I got them. They're antiques. And she was like, I don't like them.
That's what happened. Kim said, well, they're not, what Kim said was, they're not really my thing. That was what Kim said. Well, they're not really my thing. She goes, no, please. Say no more.
I would like to leave a tour by just giving out my old shitty jewelry and then being like, I'm out.
I mean, there was a queen who used to work at Lucky Chang's who passed away. She came in with a big box of stuff and was giving out things. She had cancer and she was dying. And she was literally giving everyone her stuff. And I remember being like, this is just like that, except Valentina is perfectly healthy.
And just got like an amazing job for a drag queen to get.
Yeah,
right. If you want to know, rubbing actually, it in everyone's faces. If you watch Drag Race, the Cookie Lions episode, the Empire episode, Thorgy is wearing my jacket that I got from the queen who gave away who was dying and giving her stuff.
Oh, a legacy piece.
A legacy piece.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, now let's move on to our next segment, which is Fuck Talk. It's a segment where you get to tell a fun sex story or something weird that's happened to you. Yeah, baby. Ooh, I like a little scat. I like a little scat.
Fuck talk.
Do you like a little scat?
Scat's not my thing. I'm not.
Me neither.
It's not for me.
Anyway, do you have any wild, crazy sex stories? Have you ever hooked up in drag? Have you ever?
Because you like to meet twinks on Grindr, right?
Not exclusively. But I've experienced that as I've gotten older, I'm giving off some daddy vibes. So I've just started attracting people who want daddies. When I was younger, I was really skinny and I guess that they weren't into that. And usually a lot of like twinks are into this daddy vibe. So as I've gotten older and I've just grown into my, you know, adult body, I've just started attracting, people who are into that. And I hooked up in drag one time. I sucked one dick one time in the bathroom at Lucky Chang's in drag. It was not for me. But I mean, I've had some interesting sex stories, but I don't know that they're considered wild and crazy as much as they just be really embarrassing that they happen.
I love that part.
Well, I think probably the worst experience I had was, well, there's two. I can't pick. I'll just pick one that sounds more salacious. I was in Spain. And this guy had come up to my room and was like, and he went down on me. And let's just say he finished the job. And then he looked up at me, like in my eyes, and then just said, what room is Valentina in?
She already left the tour.
And I said, I cannot believe you came up here just to ask what room Valentina's in. By the way, she's in 407. But that's not what I didn't tell him. But that was like, I remember thinking to myself, like, this guy really just blew me just to find out where Valentina is. And it didn't work because I didn't tell him. Like, was it
you
worth
said,
it?
So insane.
You said, mi amor. Well,
maybe he was just trying to make his rounds. Like, maybe you were top of the list. And then,
maybe he just blew someone and he was like, where's Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted a gut full of Drag Race girl nut.
Yeah, maybe he had just left, like, fucking, I don't know, who else was on that tour? I don't remember. Oh, Kim or Shangela's room. And then was like,
not Kim.
Where's Bob?
So, but you identify as non-binary and you're in a polyamorous relationships in which your boyfriends are not boyfriends with one another.
This is the future liberals want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what Triscuit Walker was talking about. What's that boy's name?
Christian Walker. Oh, yeah. Christian.
How is that? I know you guys just did a video on it, but like, what is it like dating two separate people? Are y'all all living together now?
No, Jacob and I. Well, actually, I'm essentially living between two places. I live over at Ezra's place and then over here, and I go back and forth between the two. And I'm looking for a new place to, because I just have too much stuff to be renting a room in anywhere, because I just have, you've been to a drag queen's house before. It's insane. And you, Meatball, you live in a drag queen's house because you're a drag queen.
It has, I have two rooms devoted to my drag.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. But it's not, I think people think it's crazier than it is. It's really not anything crazy or freaky. I mean, imagine if you have one boyfriend and then you just have another one and it's just like two
relationships. I think they would just get jealous of each other. So I commend them on their ability to not be jealous.
Well, I mean, I think that you don't have to be dating two people for your partner to be jealous of someone. Like, you can be in a monogamous relationship and your partner can still be jealous of people that you see on the street, people of your exes, of people that you're attracted to. Like, I don't think that... I don't think anyone is above jealousy, you know?
I love you, like, fully having this realization. You're like, oh.
And I also had this moment where people are in the comment section being like, it'll end. There's no way it'll last. And I was like, first of all, even if it does it, even if we do break up, and there's this insinuation that it is because we were polyamorous and not acknowledging the fact that most relationships end. Eventually, like,
right,
I would say the only one that doesn't end is the one you're in right now. All the ones in the past, they've all ended.
Oh, there's you guys all probably break up, and you're like, yeah. And how about your exes? Like,
yeah, like, but they'll of course say that it's because I have two boyfriends instead of acknowledging that it might be because I'm a terrible person.
Well, what does your mom or your family think of it? Because you came out as gay, or I'm assuming you came out at some point.
I came out,
and then you
as
were
gay.
A drag queen.
I came out as a gay, and then as a drags,
and now as a polyamorous non-binary,
and now I'm a Mormon. No, I'm kidding. Well, I told my mom. I mean, my mom was kind of like, I've always been saying things that my mom goes, "Oh, well, that's my child. That's my son." and she just thinks that I'm a free loving hippie type, and she loves me, and she's my biggest fan.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
we love supportive parents.
Yeah, that's so great.
Okay, well, I mean, listen.
Let me tell you, this is the thing. Anyone listening, if there are any parents listening to this, like, support your kids and look what they can flourish to be. It was interesting for me to look at Gigi Good, who's like really creative. And going on and on about their mom. And I was like, look at what happens when a mother unconditionally loves their child. Look at this kid on TV who is undeniably great.
And so young.
And so confident.
And so young.
Yeah.
Like 21 years old competing on that show. Yeah.
And doing really well. Like, look what happens when you are really going in for your kids. Look at how they can flourish. Look at me. Look at what I think I'm great because my mom always told me that I was really great. My mom assured me. My mom used to call me every, like, day to assure me that I was better than other winners of Drag Race. She would, like, if she would see another winner doing something, she'd be like, I saw Bianca doing something. She was funny, but you're funnier than she is. I saw Alaska. She looked pretty, but not as pretty as you looked in that one dress.
Oh.
I love that. That's incredible. Bob, do you have anything to promote? What's going on right now? You're gaining traction on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's interesting. My YouTube journey is a hair slow but steady. I'm really excited because on my YouTube page we're going to start. Do you know about Slag Wars coming out?
Yes, I love Slag Wars.
So I'm going to be reviewing Slag Wars the way I reviewed The Pit Stop. So I'm very excited to be doing my Slag Wars review show with amazing special guests. It's going to be really, I'm really, really fucking excited about my Slag Wars review show. It's going to be everything. And of course, my YouTube page and our Patreon, you know, over at the Sibling Rivalry Patreon, there's a lot of great stuff going on. Not do you only get sibling rivalry, but you also get me and Monet also do individual things. We do drag race viewing parties. Monet does, she watches movies with the fans. We talk about stuff. Oh. She also does Mo makeup, where she does makeup and like people give her suggestions of what to do with her face. It's like a lot of really cool, amazing things. And watching the drag race reviews we do over on Patreon, are they don't get recorded because we talk too much shit. So we do
viewing parties. Go live on Patreon? Live?
So what happens is it's just a private Zoom with like 500 people in it. And then we're all just watching Drag Race together.
Oh,
and
you watch the shows live?
Yes. And it's the stuff they will not. And it's the stuff they will not air me saying on the Pit Stop. They had to edit out. Oh, me and Bianca's episode of the Pit Stop, they had to edit out so much. They could not air half the episode. It was so rotted. But yeah, so we watched Drag Race with the fans. Right now we're watching season 10. We're getting through season 10. Then once that's done, we're probably going to go to like watch like All Stars or something.
Wow. Awesome. You better do it.
Y'all
got a lot going
on. Sibling
on.
Rivalry Patreon.
Mm-hmm. It's great. I'm really proud of our Patreon. It grew a lot during quarantine, and we are working very hard over there. Our Patreon is popping.
The Patreon is popping. The Patreon is cool.
There it is. Hey.
Meet me after school. Mac L'Oreal, yep, because I'm worth it. All right.
Oh, I love it. Mac L'Oreal, yep, because I'm worth it. Oh, the weight I painted on so perfect. Watch the corner of my mouth when I work it. When I roll down the hallway, they can't say nothing. My lips so luscious. We can't do this.
Where is Lil Mama? She did that. She worked with Avril Lavigne, and now she gone.
No, but she put out that new song, you know, when she did Eggs, Bacon, Grits. So,
yeah. Oh yes, but that was like a vine.
Also,
everyone go look up Bob the Drag Queen's TikTok. It's hilarious.
Oh yeah,
on every fucking platform. You're killing it.
Yeah, I don't do. I mean, so my TikTok is mostly for my out of drag stuff. I do some stuff in drag, but I think of TikToks in the moment. Like, ooh, this would be a fun TikTok. So TikTok is like my. So Instagram is where I post my photos. YouTube is where I post a lot of my makeup tutorials and videos. And then TikTok is where I post my silly jokes that I think of throughout the day, basically.
I love a multi-platform queen.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to Sloppy Seconds. You can follow us on Instagram at Sloppy Pod. Send us an email at sloppysecondspod@gmail.com. And call in with your fuck talk story to our phone number, which is 213-536-9180.
Great. Great, great, great. You can follow Big Dipper at Big Dipper Jelly and Spicy's Meatball on Instagram, or me on Twitter at Fat Drag Meatball. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't ever miss an episode, which now come out every Tuesday and Friday. Goodbye.
Doodle doo doo forever dog.
To listen to Sloppy Seconds ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus.
Sloppy Seconds is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media.
Mom! Hosted by Big Dipper and Meatball. Mixed and mastered by William Pitts.
Executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.
Our artwork is drawn by Christian Cimarroni.
And our theme song was written by Mike Malarkey.